Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf. And welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
BBS Radio.
It's a gorgeous day here in the Northeast. It was a little bit funky this morning, but it's certainly been beautiful, beautiful for the last few hours. And it's funny, I just wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about, you know, this COVID crisis and how we're starting to come out of it. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start going back to a little bit of normal life. And who's been telling you guys for the last month that your dogs are going to start having separation anxiety? Well, I've had a couple of people recently, former clients, and the dogs are my patients, and my patients have started to have separation anxiety because their family members have been home for 6 or 8 weeks. And what you see happening is that we're all excited, like, oh, it's so beautiful out. Well, remember that you've been sitting with your dogs this whole time, so your dogs don't know what the coronavirus is, right? So what's been going on is they think the new norm is you staying home all the time. So what happens? You start going back to work. Now everybody's going to start going out. We're going to go to the beaches. We're going to go to the parks. And whether you're going back to work or play, it doesn't matter. You're leaving the house. So I hope everybody listen to me 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when I started telling you in January, hey, start getting your dogs used to the fact that they can be in a crate and they're safe. They can be in one room and you could be in the other and it's okay. They're not going to die. You're not going to die. But I see, of course, everyone says, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Janice, I wanted to. I thought I'd have time to do it, but I didn't have time to do it. So now everybody's starting to make phone calls and say, hey, we have a problem. I also wanted to talk about something that can be very helpful to everybody with my new, actually they're not new, but I have new versions and new models of the Wyatt's List, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com. What's very cool about it is I'm starting to put new videos on there and new video libraries. One of the things we're going to do is have, for those of you who have little kids or, you know, have babies in the house, it's going to be my personal experience, 35 years of behavior experience with dogs and horses and bunnies. And my good friend, Dr. Temple Grandin, who is on the website, and she will also answer questions. If you pose them, they may take a week or two for me to get her to answer certain ones, but that would be for those who are interested more in the scientific explanations of things. And our good friends who have lent their time and energy to our amazing website. So check out wyattslist.com. And also, those of you who are interested in becoming canine behaviorists, we have the program for that, and it's you can become certified. We're actually looking for new people and open up new areas because there's a lot of people who are going to have problems. As one little area in Texas, I had 50 or 60 calls in probably the last 6 months just from this one little area, about a 10-mile radius of a small city in out not too far from Houston. And, you know, we need people who want to learn, and we have these great online classes, and then you do it in person. You can train at any of our facilities. We have a number of facilities, including our mega center in Missouri and in New Jersey. But we have other areas as well, and we've got people enrolled from different countries, and we've got people in California and all over. So if you're interested and you say, you know, wow, I've been spending all this time with my dog or with other people's dogs, or in the alternative, you say, oh my gosh, I've been stuck in this apartment with my neighbor's obnoxious barking chihuahuas and Yorkies and I'm going to just kill somebody. Well, how about if you could learn with us how to fix those behaviors? And not only would you have money and the joy of knowing you helped somebody, you would have a quiet time to be able to sleep in your apartment. So there are a lot of great benefits. And, you know, there's so many opportunities. And I think one thing that's been great about this whole time is that people have realized what their dogs live with, right? You think about it, and I don't know why nobody said it, but I'm going to say it right now. You now see being stuck in your house 24 hours a day, except for a couple of minutes where you go outside, and in the case of the dogs, to potty, or for you guys to take your dogs out. You see what it's like being stuck in your house. Why do you want your dog stuck in your house all day? Let's start getting opportunities to take our dogs places and to give our dogs things to do. Now, granted, most dogs will love to have some time to sleep, but you guys are starting to all see now. And I've gotten, I mean, I don't even know how many emails and messages from people who are saying to me, I never realized what my dog goes through. My dog must be bored out of his mind because we don't do anything for our dogs. We come home and then they have us. But 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day, some people working a swing shift, you might be gone. And we think about, oh, we got to feed them and walk them. But there's so much more. There's really, really so much more. So today we're going to talk about really cool things that you can do with your dog that can help the dog to have that mental stimulation that we don't have, right? We're all going stir crazy. Well, why? I mean, a 5-year-old, let's say old lab, or a golden or something like a, just a good old, like kind of one of the knucklehead dogs. He doesn't have behavioral issues. But you've been home with that dog and now you see that it can be boring. Do you start to understand now why some of you guys have dogs with separation anxiety? You start to understand at this point that your dog is bored and that's why he's chewing on the moldings, or that he's chewing on, you know, the potty pads, the wee-wee pads that you're leaving? Are you starting to understand that the dog is bored? So how can you turn that time into really fun, productive time? There's a lot of things to do. First of all, if you imagine that you're home, and remember, you can go to the refrigerator, you can go get something to eat, or get something out of the refrigerator to drink. You can go and open a window. You can go in another room. You can walk outside. You can do that because you have the ability as a human to do things, because we have those opposable thumbs, handy little things, that your dog can't do. So imagine what you're going through now being locked in government quarantine here. So you're actually being locked into your house, but you can still do things in the house. Think about it. You can go to the refrigerator. Hey, everybody, you're thirsty right now while you're listening to me? Go get yourself a cola. Go get yourself a beer, whatever you want. Go get whatever it is that you want out of your refrigerator, but your dog can't do that. So if you leave and you don't leave enough water because, oh, I don't want him to have an accident, what does he do if he's thirsty and you're holed up a little bit late from work, right? Your dog is stuck with that. So there's some great things, and I'm not big on, with dogs with behavioral issues, having toys that spit food out. There's a reason for that. When you have a toy that has, let's say like kibble in it, okay? And you have that toy, when you leave that toy, your dog is in effect hunting, right? Well, if we have a dog, the best dog in the world, you can do whatever you want with them. If we have a dog who has behavioral issues, what do we not want to do? We definitely don't want him to think that he's going to be in charge, that he's providing for himself and protecting himself, that he's doing hunt, wait, eat, and he's hunting for his own food, and he gets to eat first because it's his. But I'm talking about your general good old dog. There are things like if you did a frozen Kong or something and you give it to him and he plays with it until he's done, then you have still given him that item or that food. But for those of you who have these pop-up toys that, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the thing opens and the dog runs over and you're not giving it to him, some of these things can have deleterious effects on your dog. And this is going to be, you know, something that I think a lot of people will say, oh, no, that wouldn't matter. It matters, and it depends on the dog. So, you know, people have said to me, and I love it because everybody says it, because they call me. People aren't calling and saying, hey, Janice, I Googled you, and I know who you are, and I know you fix anything. You fix what the last six trainers and two people calling themselves behaviorists and a behavioral vet couldn't fix. I know you can fix it. And never fails. What do they say? I've had dogs my whole life. And I say, and I've had 35,000 plus people that I've worked with and their dogs. So I think even though you've had dogs your whole life, I think I have a little bit more experience in that. And they say, well, of course, but I've had dogs my whole life. I've never had a dog with a problem like this. First of all, you've never been you before. Second of all, you've never had this dog. Third of all, you're 55 years old now. You've had dogs your whole life, or you're 70 years old. You've had dogs your whole life. When was the last time you had puppies? When was the last time you had a young dog? Because people will say, oh, but I've had dogs my whole life. And this one guy, and I just remember him. He was a sweet kid. He was about 25, knew everything, right? I don't even know why he called me, because I knew everything. I don't mean myself. I mean the guy. He was like, I've had dogs my whole life. I had three German Shepherds growing up, and they were the best dogs in the world, and I've got this Maltese, and I don't know what to do with them. And I said, you're 25. How old is your dog? Well, my last one's 12 now, or 13, I think it was. I said, great. So you were 12 or 13 years old when your parents trained the best German Shepherd in the world. How old were you when your other one? Whoa, I was born. The dog was already there. Okay, so your parents trained three really good German Shepherds, and you can't handle one Maltese. Okay, so owning a dog, like if you're a kid and you had a dog, it means you know what a dog, like they eat, they drink, they pee, they poop. I know that about babies. I don't have one, but I know what they do. But having dogs your whole life is one of those statements like, I've never had a breakup this bad. Well, maybe you're a jerk and you've had, you know, people in your life who've been nice about it, or maybe you're the nicest person in the world, but you keep making the same mistake over and over again, expecting a different result. The dogs have the same exact problem. You, maybe, if you were 40 when you had your last dog, now you're 55, you might have slowed down a little. So even though you've had dogs your whole life, you may have had, how many dogs have you had? 100? 1,000? No, you haven't. You've had maybe 4? 5? Well, of course there's going to be a dog that you're going to come in contact with at some point that isn't going to be like the others. Because A, maybe you're a different you. And B, this is a different puppy, or this is a different dog. And everyone is not alike. And that's what the problem is. The problem is that we're looking at it expecting the dog we have now to be like the dog we had last or time before that. But the problem is you might be a different you. Well, now you've been through your second divorce and now you're not living in a house anymore. Or now you're living, you know, in an area that doesn't have any foot traffic. And then you meet somebody and you move in with that person. And now all of a sudden you're in a city environment. When you say that you've had dogs your whole life, you're a different you, and the dog that you've had is a different dog. You might have a different breed. You might have the same breed. The breeder you bought the last dog from might have brought in a new line from Germany, and now these dogs have a weak nerve syndrome, and all of a sudden you've got this aggressive dog or this very fearful, unpredictable dog. It might be that you decided to rescue, and the dog that you rescue might have had issues. So listen, it's all okay. The point is, let's start from today. Let's start from right now. Let's start changing what we've been doing, and let's start thinking like a dog. Let's start doing things based on the fact that you guys have all had this wonderful forced 8-week long plus vacation. And I'm using the word in quotes. Please don't send me hate mail on the word vacation. But for whatever it's worth, we are home. Now, one thing that's very disturbing is they said after 2 weeks that people were ready to divorce each other. Hey, I said I was really ashamed of America, a lot of people in America, because of that. And the reason I say that is because I get really upset when people don't understand and respect the issues that that others have. And when you have a dog, you start seeing what it's like to be a dog and to be in a house stuck there all the time without having people there, without whatever that you're used to. But there's another whole community of people who live the life that you're living, except they can't get out of that life for 18 years. I'm talking about families and kids with special needs. So, for instance, the people who were complaining after 2 weeks, oh, I'm going to divorce my husband, I can't stand it anymore, or I'm going to divorce my wife, or I can't stand my kids, you know, I just feel bad because, well, I'm happy though in a way, because you are starting to see what an entire community of people, millions of people who have a special needs child, whether it's autism, whether it's a psychiatric disorder, whether it's some kind of physical issue, you're starting to see an entire face of the United States and the world of how other people live, because that's what's going on right now. You're starting to see what a family with a six-year-old with autism and lower functioning, I hate the way they say that, but lower functioning kid, who when they take that six or seven or eight or 10-year-old child out into public, the child's having a meltdown, screaming and throwing things. And you, pre-coronavirus, would have said, pre-listening to me, Janice Wolf, on the radio today, and you would have said, you should control your brat. Guess what? That person that you just said that to, if they don't talk back to you, which they probably won't, that person is probably not going to go out for the next 5 years because of what you did. So guess what? You're also witnessing, because you have to, you have no choice, what families with a special needs child or individual go through every day. They're stuck at home, entertaining their child until the last video finally puts the kids to sleep. And some of the families, they haven't slept in 5 years. They haven't gone out of their house. They haven't slept in 5 years. Their other children in the family have different lives. So many of them are going to grow up to work with special needs people and individuals and kids and those with disabilities because of that. But it really bothers me because people in general don't think of, and I don't think they care about the plight of others. So when you say, oh, this is terrible, they're taking away my freedoms, yeah, there but for the grace of God go you. Pray that if you have a special needs child, that you don't have to go through what these other families do. So when you go out and you see a family and you see a child who's acting out or who's misbehaving, don't sneer, don't look at them. Don't stare at them. Don't give them that scoff, that look of disdain and contempt, because you don't know what they're living with. They may not ever go out again because you look at them and stare at them. Guess what? Wouldn't it be nice if you went over and you said to them, hey, can I do anything for you? What a beautiful little son you have there. He's beautiful. What a beautiful child you have. Can I help you with something? Can I get that off the shelf for you? Because you don't know what others live like. I'm very blessed at this point in my life. I've worked myself very, very ragged. And I've given, over 1,000, I think we said last count with about 1,300 service dogs, and the first, all of them were free, and I paid for all of them to help people. That's 1,300 people who can go out now, who through the years have been able to go and have, maybe the kids could go to school when they couldn't have before. Maybe the kids can go to a restaurant and the dog prevents them from having a meltdown. Or a veteran who was getting divorced from his third wife now because he's so stressed from the PTSD, that from being in combat. So you're starting to see another segment of the world that you didn't know existed. Maybe, I hope, I pray that you will start to look at life a little differently, that you will stop judging people, but yet that you will judge those who judge. I want you to start looking. I want you to go on Wyatt's List and start looking at all the wonderful things that you can do to help others and all the things you can do to help your own dog. It's wyattslist.com, wyattslist.com. Go on Wyatt's List. Go on Merlin's Kids, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And let's see if you can find things to do with your dog. Understand why. You know, the greatest thing that you can ever do in your life, the greatest achievement, is learning something new. If you keep your mind closed and if you assure, if you're like, hey, I know everything, I'm brilliant, I'm the best local dog obedience trainer in the world, and I'm just picking on obedience trainers because they know I like to pick on them, but let's just say that, and you get a dog that comes into your place and you don't know how to fix that dog's behavior, and then you say, well, you should put that dog to sleep because I can't fix it. That shows how stupid, and I don't use the word often because I deal with special needs kids who will call you out on that, but how short-sighted, myopic, parochial, let's use some big girl words, that you are. Because if you can't fix it, it doesn't mean it's not fixable. If you can't fix it, it just means you can't fix it. Doesn't mean anybody else can't or somebody else can't. I'm the person who fixes what nobody else can fix because I don't give up. I am tenacious. I'm a lion with a pit bull temperament, and I don't put up with any guff. I don't put up with crap, and I don't put up with it from dogs, and I don't put up with it from people. But I'm the kindest person you'd ever want to meet. But don't you dare say that a dog should be put to sleep because you can't fix it. That just means you can't fix it. And if you don't refer to somebody like me or some other people in our company who can fix things, then you are solely responsible if that dog is given up to a shelter or euthanized. So you can live with that. I want people to start being accountable. I want people to start realizing that it matters what you say. It matters. If you're in a job, you're a doctor, you're a surgeon, and you can't fix a tumor. Somebody comes in, oh, my three-year-old has a brain tumor. What do I do? Oh, man, I'm sorry, ma'am. I can't fix that. There's nothing you can do. Uh-uh, those are two separate things. I can't fix it means you don't have the knowledge. That's fine. I appreciate the honesty. But doesn't mean somebody else can't fix it. Okay? So I want you to start looking from your perspective now of what can you do for your dog? Let's get some things in there for your dog when, let's say in the morning, people always say, oh, I don't have time in the morning. So wake up 10 minutes early. Take your dog out with a little doggy backpack, assuming the dog is healthy and all. Put a little doggy backpack with either a roll of pennies on each side, which is 50 cents in case you didn't know how many are in a roll, a couple of pennies, you know, rolls of pennies if it's a smaller dog. If it's a larger dog, you can take a couple of 12-ounce or 16-ounce water bottles, and you can put your poop bags in there in a little doggy backpack. Things like that will tire your dog out mentally as well as physically much quicker. And then when you're leaving, the dog is like, oh, go already so I can go lay down and go to sleep. But when you get home, make sure you do the same thing. And again, when you get home, don't greet the dog and start like, oh, hi, how are you? Now the dog's jumping and getting rewarded and petted for that. I always joke with people, have a good 12-ounce or 16-ounce cup of coffee about a half hour before you get home. First thing you should be doing is go through that door, go to the bathroom. A minute later, you come out, and the dog is going to be calm, but just calmly wagging its tail. That's a perfect time for you to go and pet your dog. Don't pet your dog and make a fuss over him when you first walk in the door, because he's going to start jumping on people who come into the house. And I see heads nodding all around the world. Oh, is that why my dog jumps on everyone? Yes. And for those of you who live in the city or perhaps in, you know, like Hoboken, Jersey City area, or anywhere in Manhattan or any of the main cities, we all, if you're lucky enough, you have that long hallway where you throw the ball or the toy down the hallway, right? And the dog chases it. And what's at the end of the hallway? The front door where everybody comes in. So what are you teaching them? Hey, this hallway that goes to the door is a gymnasium, so this is a good place to get excited. And then what happens when people come in your front door? The dog is jumping and running and all over the place. But you taught them how to do that. So we have a reset button. There's a gigantic global reset button going on here right now. Beep, reset it. Now, we're going to start thinking like a dog. We're going to start changing what we've been doing. We're going to start getting the dogs used to the routines that we're going to have to go back into for those of you who are going back to jobs, which is about 90%, as they say right now, of people will go back to their normal jobs, and start letting your dog build space. Don't keep your dog on top of you all the time. So sometimes get up, teach the dog, and you can get a copy of my book for this, which is super easy. I don't know why people fight and say, oh, I don't want to read a book. It takes all of 2 hours. It only took me 2 weeks to write the whole thing, and that's including the physical typing and dictation. It's called Shh Happens, S-H-H-H Happens, Dog Behavior 101 by Janice Wolf. And it's a great, quick, easy read. But what's great about it is that you will finally be able to see what your dog needs. So in other words, it's not a book about me. It doesn't talk all about me, because you don't really care. Like when I hate when people have the Joe Jigenitz method, or the training by, you know, Jim Bob, you know, Thornton or whatever his name is, right? That to me shows when somebody needs their name all over everything. It shows like a personality defect. You are insecure and you have to have everybody know who you are. If you want to do that, make enough money to donate a wing of a hospital and go help somebody. Nobody cares who you are. But it's funny how reputations can precede you, and then you find out that, wow, you know, that person really stinks. So don't put your name on things. And I don't patronize anyone who has their name on things other than like Macy's or Bamberger's, which doesn't exist anymore. But the idea being, go out there. My book is Shh Happens, S-H-H-H Happens, Dog Behavior 101. You can get it on Amazon. It's a whopping less than $10. And read the book. You'll start to see the rules that you have to start instituting. You're going to start understanding more of how your dog thinks and why certain things that you're doing are creating problems in the dog. I'm actually working on another book, and when I have it dictated, it'll be out as well. I also have the My Name is Wyatt book series, which is pretty cool. So if you guys are able to get the book, read it, and start doing the things that I teach you to do, before it's too late. Because once you start going back, I'm telling you, I am going to be so slammed with business. All of our people are going to be so crazy busy, and I'm already seeing it with some of the people who are starting to get callbacks to work where they're giving the date of May 15th on a lot of these, or May 10th. And I'm already seeing it. People are saying to me, Janice, my dog, I didn't know my dog was like this bad. Like, now I know what all the scratches at the front door. It's the mailman. The dog, man, somebody comes up to my door, the dog wants to kill them. And this is the same dog. He was so good. But that's the problem. When you start going back to work, you're going to go back and the dog is going to go back to the same dog, except that he's had these several months now to be with you and to get more bonded and protective of you and of the dog's area. So we are going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back with the from shelter dog to service dog portion. I can't wait. You guys go get a drink of something, come back fresh and new, and listen to these great announcements. We'll be right back. And welcome back to For the Love of Dogs and the From Shelter Dog to Service Dog segment. So I promised you we were going to talk about behavioral issues, but I also want to talk about service dogs. If you have a dog that you want to train to be a service dog, or if you have a dog who is an existing service dog, but you've been quarantined and stuck for 2 or 3 months here, you have to start getting that dog back into practice. So even a dog who's already been doing it and is, from a reputable agency, and the dog does multiple tasks, if you haven't practiced in a while and been out, you might start seeing where your dog who never had issues starts having issues. One of the really common things that I see with service dogs that I have to retrain service dogs or supposed service dogs that came from other people or agencies is that people just don't train the right way. When you're training a service dog, and it's, yeah, is it hard? Yeah, it's hard to do it the way we do it, but it's so much easier because it becomes a pattern behavior rather than having something that the dog has to be constantly told what to do. So let me give you an example of that. So let's say, for instance, here at Merlin's Kids, okay? So let's say you get a dog from us, all right? And now for 6 months or a year, you don't take the dog out into public. You don't practice any of the skills. And your blood sugar tanks or your blood sugar goes too high. Is the dog still going to alert? My answer is absolutely. A Merlin's Kids dog, properly trained dog like that, yes. Because it's a behavior. It's kind of like a mother whose baby hasn't cried in 6 months, and then the child all of a sudden starts crying, you know, uh-oh, there's something wrong. But when you train a dog using, and not that you can't do it, but it's just a very different type of a thing. And my good friend Dr. Temple Grandin, had told me a story about how she was out with someone from one of the big guide dog agencies, and the woman kept waking the dog up, who was underneath the table in a restaurant, and she was sitting with Temple having lunch, and she kept waking the golden retriever, kept waking the dog up, giving it a cookie, and then telling the dog to go lay down. And Temple finally said to her, as Temple's very blunt, she finally said to the woman, why don't you just leave the dog alone and let him sleep? That's what my friend Janice does. And she told me about the story, and it's funny because it's so true. If you're training a dog to be a service dog, you want them to be automatic. That's the whole purpose of a service dog, is to mitigate a disability. So let's say you have a child who's 7 years old, a nonverbal autistic child, and you tell the dog, you verbally tell the dog to sit and stop and wait at the corner, but the child isn't going to say, sit, stop, wait at the corner because I'm going to run across the street. The child's just going to run across the street. So a lot of times the skills do not transfer over. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. Depends on the dog. Depends on the trainer. But my biggest pet peeve is that everybody's now not only a dog trainer, everybody trains service dogs. Every trainer who's ever trained his or her dog to sit, lie down, and, you know, come and give paw is like, oh, I can train service dogs and make a lot of money. And you're starting to see a lot of disreputable people and agencies starting to lie and say that they're training service dogs. it's very frustrating for me. It really is, because I see it and all I can think of is, why don't these people just stick to what they were good at, right? Why are they doing stuff that, you know, that's really counterproductive and deleterious to somebody, right? So let's talk about training methods. Now, can you train using treats or clickers or shock collars? Well, yeah, I guess you can, right? I mean, you can. I've certainly, as a kid, I used to, before I knew better, I used to train my dogs with food. And yes, they'll do it for food. But this is where you start seeing, and even those of you who are nodding your heads now and saying, oh, yeah, you know, you're right, Janice. Because how many of you, and I've, the funniest one is the one of the top agility dogs in the country. She trains with food. Super, super nice lady. She said, that dog knows if I don't have food, if I forget to put food in my pocket, that dog looks at me and flips me, like I call it the middle paw, right? Flips me the middle paw, like, I'm not going to do that for you, lady. I'm not going to do that at all. And that's where your problem is. A lot of these people are training a dog use for whatever you're doing, and you're using food, and then you complain, oh, that dog knows if I don't have food. He'll sit, lie down, spin around. He'll do every trick in the book. But the second that I don't have food, he looks at me like he looks like he's telling me to, you know, flip a bird to me, right? I'm not going to do that. I don't, there's nothing in it for me. Because you guys become human Pez dispensers. Now, it doesn't really matter if you're just trying to entertain company that comes over to your house and, oh, look at my dog here. Go get a cookie. Look at all the things he'll do. And then you try it without the cookie, and the dog is like, well, there's nothing in it for me. It's like your teenager. I'll give you $20 to clean your room. Forget that. It's the room I pay for you to live in until the government says when you turn 18, I no longer have to pay for you to live there. Clean your darn room. I'm not paying you to clean your room. It's a room I'm providing for you out of the goodness of my heart. Same kind of thing. So don't always train your dog with food or with clickers or whatever. Clickers, the concept of a clicker is wonderful. It marks a behavior, marks a period in time. You can do that with a word. You can, instead of using a clicker, you can say, good boy. You can cluck like I do to my horses, like a click. You can do that. You can do a whistle. You can do anything. The key is marking the behavior you like. And this is where I get into things, training service dogs especially, but also just with your pet dogs. Mark the behavior immediately. So let's say, like we talked about earlier in the day today, earlier in the program, and I said, when somebody comes over your house, right, and the dog starts jumping, what do? Oh, we pet him. Okay, no, don't do that. But you're still petting him. You're marking that behavior immediately with reward and reinforcement, okay? There's a difference between a reward and a reinforcer. A reward is a direct consequence. You're getting something because you did a behavior versus catching the dog, reinforcing it in a moment that you like. And it's very different. Most people will say, I don't see the difference, Janice. Well, I'm going to tell you the difference. If you said to me, hey, Janice, can you come over? I'm going to buy you a 5-pound amazing lobster, okay, a Caribbean spider lobster, because those things are so good. I used to live in the Caribbean for 9 years, so I'm an expert on that. And if you tell me 5-pound lobster, heck, I'll be over there to help you clean your garage, but I'm doing it because I'm getting a reward. So now you call me up and you say, hey, Janice, I'm going to get you a lobster. Can you come help me clean out my living room? Sure, I'll be there. But this time you get little slipper lobster. It's like 4 ounces. I'm like, yeah, all right, still. The third time you call, you say, hey, Janice, I need help cleaning out my guest room. Can you help? I'm like, I'll come over. And this time you give me a piece of cod. The fourth time you call me and say, hey, Janice, can you come over and help me clean the other guest bedroom? And I go, sorry, I'm busy. Why? Because you didn't deliver. You promised me something and the promise changed. And as the promise changes, and the benefit changes, the behavior, quote-unquote behavior, because it's not really behavior, it's an act. You're changing the body position. You're not changing the behavior. Versus a behavior changing, which would be, you say to me, hey, Janice, come on over. I'm going to make dinner, okay? Let's do something. We'll have fun. Help me clean my garage. And I say, okay, I'll be happy to help you. You serve me a 5-pound amazing Caribbean spider lobster. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. Thank you so much. You call me, hey, we got to clean out the guest bedroom. Can you help me? Sure, I'll be happy to help you. And you make me a slipper lobster tail. And I go, oh, that was really sweet of you. Thank you for dinner. And the next time you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken or you don't have time. And I go, no, that's no problem. I'm going to eat at home. But I'll come back that fourth time. Why? Because I wasn't doing it for the reward. And this is why so many people who attempt to train service dogs or high-end dogs using food or clickers or the crazy, you know, people who use shock collars, and I'm not affiliated with anyone who uses that. It's not that they can't be helpful in very unusual, extreme cases. And certainly hunting dogs, that's different. That's a totally different kind of a collar. But if you have a controller and you can zap a dog, there's something called an EEG. If you guys want to see, look up a video of somebody getting an EEG. I had them on my spine and my legs, and they zap with the exact same thing as you use in an e-collar, quote-unquote e-collar, the shock collar. And I'm telling you, I was kicking. I was in so much pain, and they said, oh, it shouldn't hurt you. It's only a little vibration. I said, vibration, my rear end. This isn't a vibration. It hurts. It's on my nerves, and this is on my leg. This is the back of my leg. This isn't my throat. So if you're training your dog versus teaching your dog, that's why when you remove the reward, you remove the behavior very, very often. Not always, but I'd say most of the time. Whereas with a behavior, it's not a reward, it's a reinforcement. So let's say when the dog is jumping, when somebody comes in and you correct the dog, and if you read my book, you'll see very gently how to correct the dog. But then how about if the dog comes up and walks up and doesn't jump on you or doesn't jump on your guest? Wait a moment. Make sure the behavior is there, and then you reach down and you pet that dog. Aw, what a good dog. And don't go, oh, you are so good, and raise your voice, because the higher pitch your voice, the more excitement, which leads to more dominance, which leads to more problems. It's just really about making sure that you are able, in all of your infinite wisdom, to timing. Timing is everything, right? You bet on a horse. The horse gets a bad break out of the gate and doesn't win. Best horse in the field, timing is everything. You bought a lottery ticket. You had the winning numbers. Oh, it was the day after they called the numbers already. Timing is everything. You meet the person you should be with, who is the most beautiful, wonderful person in the world. But just then, you stick your finger up your nose, and they go, oh, God, that's disgusting. First time you ever did it in your life. Timing is everything. Timing is everything. And this is why, instead of constantly doing the obedience through obesity route of, I call it the Honey Boo Boo School of Obedience. Sorry, Honey Boo Boo, but you are a little pudgy little thing. That's why so many dogs don't keep a behavior, but it's only a body position. And that's what differentiates and distinguishes the difference between a behavior, which is a learned, over time, taught behavior, you're teaching it, versus training, where the dog is doing something to get something. And that's where the dogs who are taught do not typically lose those skills years later. Like years later, they'll still remember them. But a dog who is trained will tend to lose those skills because he's thinking, he's an opportunist, right? He's thinking, how can I get that food? And if I can't get it from you honestly, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to jump up when you're not looking because I'm a yellow lab, and I'm going to go counter surf, and I'm going to grab that roast when you're not looking. Instead, because all he's thinking of is food, or like my friend Temple said, right, to the lady, why don't you just leave the dog alone? Let him sleep, like my friend Janice does, right? When we go into a restaurant with one of our service dogs in training, we don't give them food. Why would you give the dog food? Invest under the table where there's already food. Instead, you teach the dog. You don't train him. You teach the dog what you want. You teach him that when we're in a restaurant or we're in a mall or we're on an airplane, you just lay there. So when the dog, when we're training them and the dog finally sits down, I don't care if it takes 2 hours, he finally sits down, give him a little pat on the head. He's probably going to stand up. He sits down again, give him a pat on the head. He lays down, give him a nice long stroke all through his body, give him a little massage and stand up again. He's going to stand up. Eventually he's going to lay down again, pet him, reinforce it. Then the dog knows after a while, and you have to do it repetitively, right, to create a behavior, pattern behavior. But once you do that, you will be so shocked to see that once you walk into that airplane, the dog goes to his spot and lays down, knows exactly what to do. You don't have to tell him what to do. You don't have to tell him, sit. Think about you guys. How many times do you think a dog has to be told the word sit to sit? Okay? You guys are saying, well, once. That's not true. I've never heard anybody go sit and then wait for the dog to sit. They go sit. No, sit. Fluffy, sit. Sit. I said sit. Sit down. You're not listening to me. Sit down. Honey, go get a cookie. Here's a cookie. Fluffy, sit. Good, Fluffy. Well, Fluffy's playing you like your kids can do too, right? So the goal is teach the dog. Catch the dog doing that behavior. And if you do catch your dog doing the behavior you want, let's say he's sitting, pet him and say, good sit. Now, he doesn't know what it is, but after a while, and he's sitting, and every time he sits down, you tell him, good sit, and you pet him and give him reinforcement, he starts to learn the word sit. But also, don't say good boy when you're training. If you remember nothing else from everything I'm teaching you today, if you are, quote-unquote, training your dog, and you're trying to train him to sit or train him to lie down or train him to give paw or whatever, don't say good boy. So people go, well, I want to reward my dog for sitting. Right. But what is good boy? What does boy mean or girl mean? What does that mean? Is the skill a boy? Is the skill a girl? No. The skill is sit. The skill is lie down. The skill is, for like what I was training my little Ridgeback puppy, open the door. The skill has a name. If you want to give it a name and you want to use that, then make sure that you use that word in the reinforcement or in the reward process. So if you're training a dog to sit and you say, Fluffy, sit, and he sits, you shouldn't be saying good boy or good Fluffy. You should be saying good sit. So he knows, well, good means I did something mom likes. And sit, well, that must be what this is because I know my name isn't sit, okay? So the dog, you want him to lie down. Fluffy lie down or Fluffy down. And make sure you know the difference between lie down and off. Not that you should, I never train dogs to do off because my dogs don't jump in the first place. People will say, no, down. Well, does down mean sit down? Does down mean lay down? Or does down mean don't jump? Figure it out because you are confusing the living daylights out of your dog. So come up with a command, come up with a word for it, and use that word. So if you say, Fluffy, lay down, and Fluffy lays down, good lay down. Fluffy paw, good paw. Okay, you see what I'm saying? So this is where you can make it a lot easier on yourself if you reinforce. And if you use the word to reward the dog and to kind of set that in stone, the biggest improvement you can make in your dog's behavior. And be consistent in what you call it. So if you're calling it lay down and your roommate is calling it down and somebody else is going, you know, lay or lie or whatever, and you have four words that mean the same thing. Make sure you keep consistent. Even if you write it down or have the whole family work together, because it's really fun. It really is so much fun to train dogs. I love teaching dogs. I don't really train them. And you'll have the occasional, you know, dolt, D-O-L-T, not adult. You have the occasional dolt who says, oh, you say you train service dogs, but how do you train service dogs? You say you're not a trainer, you're a behaviorist. That's kind of like, I'm a brain surgeon and you pick pimples for a living, okay? I deal with the big stuff. Don't get involved with stuff you don't understand. Behavior is the highest form of teaching. The highest form of training is still training. But if you're teaching, you're having the dog or the child remember things that become a part of behavior, which then improves and impacts other areas of its life. And that is something that you should all be listening to. So in closing, I want you to think about, go on to wyattslist.com, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com. Get all this information. Definitely think about getting a copy of my book, which is very helpful, and will teach you all kinds of incredible things about behavior. It's called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101 by Janice Wolf. And it has a big picture of Wyatt on the front that's really cute, and his paws look immensely long. It's adorable. And then also check out merlinskids.org. That's where we train service dogs. We also train people to train service dogs and to become canine behaviorists. So I hope everybody has a good, healthy, happy, safe time. Please take care of yourselves. Keep the social distancing until the things are kind of regulations are relaxed. But you know what? I'm so glad everybody finally learned how to keep themselves clean. And maybe you can still use a mask and gloves or Purell. It wouldn't kill you. It might kill you not to. All right, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful evening and a great weekend. Lots of love. God bless.